Yeah, so I was new to the boating world and boating life. And I think I made a, not really a joke, but just something to the extent of like, oh, God forbid, like, you know, we don't want to sink. And I was talking about my boat. I wasn't talking about anybody else's boat. And I remember my neighbor looked at me and he goes, oh, like, we don't use that word around here unless it actually happens. And I was like, what are you talking about? And he was like, that's a pretty serious word. Like, only use it, like, if it happens. And I was like, oh, damn, okay. Good to know.
People would say, hey, are you around tomorrow night? We want to do a barbecue. And we would say things like, no, we're on the hard for the next week. We got to do the survey. And so that's how most of us refer to land, is on the hard.
You know, there's a lot of like, oh, you know, he's a landlubber. You know, that kind of thing.
Landlubber, so like someone who, you know, lives on land.
Landlubbers.
Dirt dwellers.
You dirty landlubbers, hey.
Weekenders.
That's what we call everybody else, yeah, the weekenders.
So what's that?
That's those that don't live aboard.
We've got another one, which is a sneak aboard, which is a marina that doesn't allow you to live aboard, but you do anyways, so you got a sneak aboard.
Or if Rick's looking for the ketchup, I'll say it's, you know, it's in the forward, it's forward and inboard in the fridge, so he knows where he's looking. It's kind of like that.
You mostly use those terms between friends, like my friends that live on land or whatnot. You're just a dirt dweller. You don't understand.
A liveaboard is someone who lives on a boat year-round, even during the frigid winter season. All five of the people you just heard live year-round on a boat, floating on Lake Ontario. This is Toronto's liveaboard community.
I go to sailing camp over there, like on the west side of the Port Credit, and I learned how to sail there. Well, my friend at sailing camp told me I should join the race team, but I said I don't want to sail the race, I just want to do it for the joy.
That's Owen Marshall. He's 10 years old and has never lived on land.
It makes me really happy that he, you know, he's managed to, like, find the thing that, or feel the same things that we love about it, you know. You know, when you're out sailing and it's a beautiful day, and that's how it all got started.
That's Owen's mother, Lisa McKay. Lisa and her husband, Rick, have lived on their boat for 21 years straight.
That great moment of being out on the water, you know, in the sunshine, and, you know, those great feelings. You know, he's got his own memories of sailing on his own now, you know, which is, you know, sort of directs right, goes right back to why Rick started having this dream in the first place, is when he was a little kid and, you know, being out on the water and being out fishing and, you know, swimming and stuff like that up north. You know, that's what sold him on this, you know, and now Owen's going to have his own memories that, you know, will maybe influence how he goes on in his life, you know. I mean, he could potentially live aboard his whole life.
I've noticed this clock kind of going off.
Yeah.
Most of our conversation. What exactly is it? Is it
so just... if you were on a ship and you were like part of a crew, you'd be on watch. And in a 24-hour period, there are three 8-hour watches. And so when they created the chiming clock so you could hear what time it was, no matter where you were. You wouldn't have to look at the clock to see what time it was. You could hear it by the number of bells.
Rick was out of town when I visited, but all three of them live at the Port Credit Yacht Club.
You get some severe weather every now and again, and you wonder, you know, how it's all going to go. Like if we get big wind or, you know, you worry about the power going out, which happens every once in a while. You know, those are, and then that's more just about, you know, just like dealing with it as opposed to scary. But, you know, you do get some big weather that you have to.
Oh, like that one storm in, when I was like 8 and the snow was like 2 feet tall.
Yeah, we had a big snowstorm right around Christmas time. Power went out. Like it was, you know, you gotta deal with it. We're prepared. We have a generator. We have alternative heat. Like, we've got a plan. But one
time it was so bad that we had to go to a hotel.
You know, we're talking like 100K wind. You don't get any sleep. It's so loud. I mean, he sleeps through it, but it's just so loud. All you hear is like the big gusts, and you're bouncing around, and it's it's just really, really. So one of the reasons why we, if it's going to be that bad, we'll jump ship for a night.
What do you do in the winter? What if there's snow? Do you get cold? How do you live on a boat? How do you keep the ice from freezing you in? Is it a powerboat? Is it a sailboat? 2 years, the first year I came to Jenna McDougald.
That's his school.
I brought my iPad, and we took a bunch of pictures inside my boat. Then I hooked it up to the screen in my classroom, and we showed the pictures, and I heard a lot of wows.
Shane Valance is a 46-year-old Toronto liveaboard. Like Owen, he also finds it tedious to talk about where he lives.
I'm always okay with having that conversation, but typically it's, oh yeah, where do you live? Oh, I live in Port Credit. Oh yeah, we're in Port Credit. I love Port Credit. Oh, I'm on the water. Oh really? We're on the water. Well, I'm on the water.
Probably say in the water.
And then, oh really? Oh, I love that. Yeah, okay. What's it like? And then you get into the whole, what's winter like? Isn't it cold?
Shane lives with his wife, Natalie Walker, and they've spent nearly 20 years living on a boat together.
I always joke that if Natalie and I don't want to look at each other, we have to agree to both sit in very specific spots.
I'll tell you something else.
Like, she has to sit in one corner, and I have to sit in the other corner. And if we're not in those two corners, we can always see each other.
It just made me think of an aspect that we haven't talked about, and is a couple living on a boat in such a confined space. You can't fight. We never have fights.
There's no secrets.
You can't get mad at somebody and storm downstairs or something, or, you know, sleep in another room. You just can't.
On a beautiful summer day, it's hard to distinguish the difference. But on stormy, rainy days, when you're lying in bed and your roof is 2 feet above your head, and it's only an inch thick of fiberglass and wood, and the hard rain's coming down, if you enjoy the sound of a storm, there is nothing better than just hearing the rain, listening to the wind. And I find it so relaxing. It's like sitting on your front porch.
Most liveaboards start preparing for the winter season before the end of November. Natalie explains that in order to trap more heat inside of the boat, they need to build a plastic enclosure around the boat.
Natalie, yeah. Do you know where the duct tape is?
So Shane is standing outside with the heat gun and pressing it, and the guy inside is matching his impression with his hand, or I think he's using a box. And it's a quick shot of heat, and you can see it shrinking and melting, and then you step away, and then the cool air cools it right away.
Ready?
Right in there.
right in here. Yeah, right there.
So, I totally intended to wrap my boat, but I was a little late in doing so. I think it was November, and we got a fairly decent, like, rainstorm, and then it turned cold overnight, so it froze. And then we had a little bit of snow in the morning time. So by the time I was waking up to get going, and I hadn't wrapped my boat yet, which means my on a sailboat you have what's called a companionway. So when you're walking to get out of the boat, you look up and you have to slide a hatch above your head back, and then you'll have another hatch right in front of you that you basically just you push out. It's either on hinges or you take it out and you step out. Without that being covered and being completely covered in rain that froze and then covered in snow, I went to move the top hatch to find that it didn't move. And I went to move the bottom hatch as like a secondary thing to also find that it was also frozen in. And kind of had like a quick moment of like, oh my God, what have I done? Now I'm stuck in my sailboat. A little bit of a freak out there. But I kind of just like hulked my way through it and just like smacked it in critical points, like kind of hard to like try to knock the ice off on the outside, and I was able to get some movement going and just kept working it, and I could hear the ice like crunching off the hinges as like I was trying to open them. And after I got the front piece open, I was able to kind of like shimmy my way out because it's a big enough hole, and then I was able to just like, I had to like shovel my boat off. And I shoveled my boat out, which is not something I ever thought I would have to do in my life, but yeah, and then that was kind of like an aha moment as to why people, why people wrap their boats earlier rather than later.
That's Benjamin Canning. He's 24 years old and has been living aboard for just over a year. Ben lives at Marina Key West with his 7-month-old Basset Hound, Moby. He recently sold his sailboat and moved onto a 30-foot-long 1987 powerboat.
It's an old car horn I installed, so it's just kind of funny. So come on aboard. Welcome to Lake Fever, the name of the boat. Yeah, so we've got main living room area, so we've got our TV and, like, internet set up. We got, like, a nice big couch here. We've got Moby, who's excited to see us, my pooch. And then, if looking forward, you look down across the boat and you see, like, the kitchen and then the little kitchen table and the bedroom at the very front, bedroom and bathroom. Stereo system is playing. We get to feel small. Tragically Hip, of course. I don't know, I've said it for a little while. People who live on the boats are kind of like small town folk. Even, doesn't matter where they're from, like Martin right beside me here, I think he's German and grew up in Germany. He has a really thick German accent, but is more like any Canadian than I could point to, just because he's so helpful. He's really, like, he's willing to do whatever you need to do, to be your friend, to help you out, to give you advice, like all these different things. Like he offered to, just a random thing, he's got a submersible water pump, so he'll pump water out of Lake Ontario, put it through a water filtration system, and then use it as water on board, because they'll shut the hoses down like when it gets super cold. And he goes, hey, look, I'll build your little thing like to your water receptacle, which is over here on the port side, so it'll come back, so when I fill up my water, I'll fill up your water as well. And that was the same day I met him.
Wow.
Yeah, just like, when was the last time anyone has ever been that genuine and nice off the docks? To me, it doesn't happen. People are kind of ignorant on land, but that's just my opinion.
Oh, thank you so much, Paul.
Yes.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Huge.
No worries.
Huge help.
Good job done, right?
So Shane is up there with our neighbor, Paul, and because Paul is 6-something feet tall, he's very helpful to get the plastic unfurled and over all the high spots. And Shane and I did it with him last year. I can do it if I have to, but it's not fun with the two of us doing it because I'm so short.
So home, as like a, as a topic, has always been like an interesting thing for me. So I grew up obviously not in the city, and so I'll always refer to, as you know, the farm where I was born and raised as home, or a home per se. And then you know, moving to Toronto and bouncing around in the neighborhoods and all the apartments, that was never home to me. I never really felt a connection to any of the neighborhoods or any of the downtown living, because it just seemed too transient, too nothing. And what's funny is that, like, whenever I moved aboard the boat to literally a transient home, and bounced around all these marinas, is when I started to find, like, more of a sense of community and more of a sense of quote, home. You know, I might have different neighbors every 6 months, but everybody kind of has the same, you know, willingness to help. The same culture, per se. Everyone is looking out for everybody. Everybody's always in a good mood, laughing, and you know, invites you over to their home for dinner. And when was the last time you could say your neighbor that you live beside in downtown Toronto ever invited you over for dinner, let alone even knows your name? And so that, to me, is kind of like an interesting aspect of, like, home, back home on the farm that I found here in the city.
I spent a few months getting to know the liveaboards and started to notice a pattern. Every person I met described how helpful the community is. I even experienced that myself when I met Shane and Natalie for the first time to interview them. It was a Tuesday night and I arrived at the train station. My toes were numb and I was expecting to walk to the marina when Shane and Natalie insisted on driving over to pick me up. I wasn't surprised when Lisa had offered the same thing a few weeks later. I started to realize that being a liveaboard means being a good neighbor. My name is Julia Fioni, and this is Toronto's Liveaboard Community.